Here's a crucial question. Do the Gospels contain eyewitness accounts? That is so important. If they do, if they were written during the time period of Jesus, then we can trust them that they're accurately reporting what's going on. Because if they are eyewitness reports, then obviously other eyewitnesses who saw things, if these were made up, if these were lies, would be contradicted and Christianity would come to a halt very quickly. So let's take a look today. Do the Gospels contain eyewitness accounts? Modern critics, many of them, say no. Let me give you two examples. Bart Ehrman, probably the best known Bible critic today. His books sell well. He does tours, cruises, and he's on it. And he sells DVDs. I mean, just amazing stuff that he's put out. Here's Bart Ehrman. Quote, "Why was the tomb supposedly empty? Frankly, I don't know that it was. Our first reference to Jesus' tomb being empty is in the Gospel of Mark, written 40 years later by someone living in a different country who had heard it was empty. How would he know?" Can you hear the question there, or the criticism there? He got this report. He just heard that it was empty. How would he know? That's the key question, isn't it, about the Gospels? How would Mark know? How would Matthew know? How would Luke know? How would John know if they're second, third, fourth, fifth-hand accounts? So that's a crucial question. Here's another modern critic, Richard Dawkins. Now, he doesn't know the Bible anywhere nearly as well as Ehrman does. But he's got a huge audience, and here's what Dawkins says. Quote, "The Gospels are not reliable accounts of what happened in the history of the real world. All were written long after the death of Jesus. Nobody knows who the four evangelists were, but they almost certainly never met Jesus personally." So again, they're just hearing things. They're not reliable accounts written long after the death of Jesus, shrouded in mystery. We don't have the first inkling of what really went on there. Well, if the Gospels contain eyewitness accounts, why is this really important? There's no time for mythology to creep in. It takes a long time before a person's story, his real story or her real story, get turned into mythology. Many people believe hundreds of years, but anyway, there would be no time for mythology. It may mean that the stories contained there are more accurate. And if they're eyewitness accounts, here's the crucial thing, it means very early dating for the Gospels. And you think about other ancient literature, that's the Holy Grail. Every ancient literature, people are hoping that it's as early as possible, the copies that they have, because the earlier the copy, then probably the closer to the truth it is. And that's what we see, whether it's Herodotus or Caesar or Homer. People are always looking for earlier and earlier copies, and the earlier the better, because you're closer to the time period. Pretty obvious. So if the Gospels contain eyewitness accounts, it means they probably are extremely early dating, they're more accurate, and there's no time for mythology. So it's a huge issue. Well, what is the New Testament? Let's start there. What does it claim? Do the Gospels themselves and other writers in the New Testament claim that they were eyewitnesses? How about John 21:24? This is the disciple who testifies to these things. So the author of John says, basically, I testify to it. I was there. 1 John, this is chapter 1. "That which was from the beginning, which we have heard, which we have seen, this we proclaim." And again, do you see how he's contrasting this with myth and ancient stories? He said, no, he said, we heard it, we saw. How about 2 Peter 1:16? What does the author say here? "We were eyewitnesses of his majesty." We were eyewitnesses. There's a direct claim. We saw it. We were there. Luke himself, in his first chapter, Luke 1, "The things which have been fulfilled among us were handed down to us by those who from the first were eyewitnesses." So what does he claim? Something pretty powerful. He says, I got the information from eyewitnesses. So he does not claim that he was the eyewitness, but he said, I was given to these by eyewitnesses. And in 1 Corinthians 15, verses 3 to 8, this part has an important creed. It's an early, very early Christian statement of belief. And here's what Paul says, "For what I received, I passed on to you." So he's claiming, I didn't make this up. This is not my teaching. I was given this, and we know when he was given it in Galatians. It was a very early visit that he had to Peter and to Paul. I'm sorry, Peter and James. For what I received, I passed on to you, that Christ died for our sins, that he appeared to Peter, to more than 500 of the brothers, most of whom are still living. So do you hear what he's saying there? This creed is saying that there were hundreds of people that can testify to this, most of whom are still living. So go talk to them. They were eyewitnesses. They saw it. So the New Testament makes some very specific claims about eyewitness reports being part of the Gospels. Well, let's move down a little bit further as far as history goes. What did the church fathers claim right after the disciples? Let's take Clement. Around 95 AD, he comes up with this clear statement that Peter's followers asked Mark to write Peter's gospel. And so it sounds like Mark, in a sense, was the secretary, and Peter gave him the information. Probably Peter was a little rough-hewn, and maybe his language skills weren't up to par, but he went around talking about Jesus and then sat down with Mark and was able to have Mark write his gospel. So that comes from 95 AD. That's pretty close to the time period there. Papias, a church leader in 110 AD, he studied with Polycarp, who was one of John's disciples, says that Mark, he calls him the interpreter of Peter. In other words, probably maybe translating some Aramaic into Greek, or poor Greek into better Greek. And he says Matthew wrote his gospel originally in Hebrew. Okay, so there are two people that are being credited with writing, and that they were the original, one was the original disciple, and the other was talking to the disciple. How about Irenaeus in 180 AD? He studied under Polycarp. So you have John living up probably to the 80s or 90s, Polycarp, and then Irenaeus talking to Polycarp. He says Matthew published his gospel while Peter and Paul were still alive. Mark wrote what Peter preached. Luke wrote his gospel and attended Paul. And John published his gospel while staying at Ephesus. So that's interesting. Irenaeus names all four of them as the people we think of today and says that they were connected to the life of Jesus. Matthew really was the disciple. Mark wrote based on what a disciple told him, Peter. And Luke was at the time of Paul, so that would have been the 50s or 60s AD. And John published his gospel, the person who was with Jesus, one of the inner three around the life of Jesus. And other church fathers, over and over, as they talk about the early authors, they agreed that those four writers, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, wrote the Gospels we have today. There was never controversy. There's never a church father that says, gosh, we really don't know. It could have been a much later. No, they always say the four writers that we have today, that we say today were the authors, were the authors during the time period of Jesus, during the eyewitness period. And think about why certain books were actually chosen for inclusion in the New Testament. They weren't chosen based on any kind of favoritism. They had to contain accepted teaching. They had to be used in various churches, not just one little area. But then the foundational issue, they had to be verified as from apostolic authority. So it had to be connected with an apostle. Once the apostles have gone, then you can't really have a new gospel, because you got to be connected. Mark was connected because he talked to Peter. Matthew and John were chosen because they were disciples, and Luke was accepted because he got his material from the eyewitnesses, including the gospel writer, including the disciples. You know, there's a lot of indirect evidence. So that's some direct evidence, some statements by people who were in the know. But there's a lot of indirect evidence for eyewitnesses in the New Testament. I'm going to give you several here. One is called a situation called interlocking gospels. Now, what do I mean by interlocking gospels? Well, I'm going to give you some examples in just a second. But let me tell you what's going on here. You have four different accounts of the life of Jesus. And sometimes you're going to get slight differences in the way the four of them describe a particular event, because many of them cover the same events, don't they? And a cold case detective named J. Warner Wallace, and I highly recommend his material if you have a chance. It's J. period and then Warner, W-A-R-N-E-R, and then W-A-L-L-A-C-E, Wallace. Cold case detective. He's written a book. We'll talk some good resources in a minute, but he's written a book about the Gospels. Here's what he said. He was first investigating Christianity as an adult. He was not a Christian. In fact, he was a pretty cold atheist. He said, now remember, he's a detective, so he's interviewed dozens of people involved with crimes or seeing crimes. He says, if you have multiple eyewitnesses that see the same event, they never tell you the same story, but they do tell you a story that can be put together like a puzzle. I was seeing these characteristics in the Gospels, and I thought, wow, the stuff feels and looks a lot like eyewitness testimony. Now that's from J. Warner Wallace. Now what does he mean by interlocking? He says, if you put these together, you're going to see a bigger picture, kind of like a puzzle piece attached to another puzzle piece. Let me give you an example. Do you remember when Jesus is brought before Pilate? Pilate says to Jesus in one of the Gospels, ask him a question, are you a king? And Jesus says, yes, it's as you say. And then Pilate turns around to the authorities, the Jewish authorities, said, I see no reason to put this man to death. Now that's puzzling, because remember what his job is to keep the province quiet, and anybody that comes along and says I'm king is in major trouble, because you only have one king, that's Caesar, and that's treason to claim that you're the king. And yet, according to this gospel, that's all Jesus says. Yes, Pilate asks him, are you a king? Jesus says yes, and Pilate turns around and says, no problem. And you think, why would he do that? If you read another gospel, same account, this time when Jesus is asked, are you a king? Jesus says, yeah, I'm a king, but not of this world. I'm a spiritual king. Oh, okay. Now Pilate says, basically, well, then I'm not going to worry about that. You can be a spiritual king all you want. You just don't want to be a physical king threatening our emperor. Here's another example. In one of the gospels, Jesus is on trial. He's being harassed by the Jews and the Romans, physically attacked. And it says in one case, somebody came up and struck him and said, you're this great Messiah. Tell us who hit you. And you think, well, that would be super easy. Somebody walks up to you and hits you. You know who did it. But it's only after you read another gospel account that you realize Jesus was blindfolded before the person struck him. So you needed those two Gospels together. That's why they call them interlocking. This is an example of eyewitness testimony. You get the whole story once you hear from several. By the way, sometimes it's not interlocking Gospels. Sometimes it's interlocking with a Gospel and a non-Christian source. So I'll give you an example. When Joseph decides he's going to come back out of Egypt, it says he heard that Herod, I think it was Archelaus, was the king, and he doesn't want to mess with him. He doesn't want to be anywhere near him. And you think, well, why is that? Well, you have to read Josephus to find out that this Herod, who is the son of Herod the Great, killed a bunch of Jews and was known for really terrible brutality. So you put those two together, now you see why Joseph was really concerned. So these are called interlocking gospels. You can just look that term up and find dozens of examples. It sounds exactly like what you'd get from eyewitnesses. People who were to put these stories together hundreds of years later would not have these kinds of varying viewpoints. Okay, so that's one piece of indirect evidence that eyewitnesses wrote the New Testament. Here's a second one. I'm going to do a timeline here and see what you think. The timeline is going to run backward in time, and you'll see why in just a second. Everybody agrees the temple was destroyed in 70 AD. Okay, so let's start there. Do any of the Gospels mention the destruction of the temple? No. Does the book of Acts mention the destruction of the temple? No. Do you think It would have been important for them to mention that because Jesus predicted that the temple would be destroyed. Yeah. So in my mind, and in a lot of people's minds, that moves the Gospels back even before 70 AD. Now, we know pretty closely when Peter was put to death and Paul was put to death, mid-60s AD. Now, does the book of Acts mention the death of either of those two individuals? No. Does it mention the death of anybody else? Yes. For example, Stephen, the death of Stephen. Now, Stephen was a martyr. I mean, there's no doubt about it. Powerful. But do you think if the author knew that Peter was dead and Paul was dead, would that show up in the book of Acts? Oh, definitely. These are the stalwarts of the faith by the mid-60s, but they're not in there. So that suggests strongly, now it's indirect evidence, but it suggests strongly Acts was written before the mid-60s. But Acts is actually the second book by the same author. We learn about it in the book of Luke. So we can move Luke previous to Acts, so it may be in the late 50s. But Luke is not the first gospel. Everybody recognizes, whether they're Christians or non-Christians, that Mark was the first gospel. Now we're in the early 50s, and even earlier than that is Paul. And so we've gotten ourselves back into maybe the 40s. Jesus was crucified in 30 or 33 AD. We're within maybe 10 or 15 years of the time of Jesus. We're definitely in the time of eyewitnesses. Let's try another example. So here's a third piece of evidence, indirect evidence, for eyewitnesses writing in the New Testament. If you look at certain characters in Mark, they're anonymous. They're not given names. So, for example, in the arrest, it just says, somebody cut the ear off of a high priest's attendant. That's all it says. And we don't know. Also in Mark, he never names who the high priest is. And then he doesn't mention the woman who anointed Jesus as he was reclining. But those people are actually named in the book of John. And so an indirect piece that a lot of people suggest is that these people were given protection in the book of Mark anonymously because they were still alive. And because they were still alive, they could have gotten in trouble. Well, that's something to think about. Here's another indirect piece of evidence for eyewitnesses in the New Testament. If they weren't eyewitnesses or talked to eyewitnesses, why would they pick those four people for the Gospels if you're just going to make this stuff up a lot later? Let's go through the four. Matthew. Okay, yeah, he was a disciple. All right. But was he a famous one? Was he one of the leading disciples? No, he's not mentioned much at all in the Gospels. So Matthew seems like an odd choice if you're just going to make this stuff up later. If, however, he was truly an eyewitness writing this, then use his name. Matthew. Okay, how about Mark? Mark isn't even a disciple. Why would you use him unless he really did talk to Peter? Matthew, Mark, Luke. Luke's not even a Jew. He seems to be a non-Jew. And so he didn't write one of the Gospels. He didn't hang out with Jesus. Why is he being named? Because he probably really wrote the Gospel. If you're making it up, you wouldn't make it up by attributing it to Luke. Matthew, Mark, Luke, John. Okay, John definitely was one of the prime disciples. But you got three names that seem very odd that would have been chosen if, again, this is just made up material long after the eyewitness period. Is there any evidence outside the New Testament that would verify and support the idea of eyewitness writings? Well, yeah. How about archaeology? Luke, for example, is going down as one of the best historians ever. There have been people who have tried to attack Luke and have actually come to faith and believe that he was an excellent historian in the book of Acts in particular. If you take a look at a book called I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist, they have page after page of the specifics that Luke got right that only somebody in the first century would know anything about. For example, when you went from town to town, people had a different title and a different name for city officials. Luke gets every name exactly right. Let me give you one example from John, as far as archaeology goes. John says there were five colonnades around the Pool of Bethesda where a miracle took place periodically. Well, the temple got knocked down in 70 AD. The whole city of Jerusalem got destroyed. Who in the world, if they're making this stuff up in the 100s, 200s AD, they wouldn't know how many colonnades were there. But John says there are five. So they've done archaeological diggings, and guess what? They found five colonnades. Pretty powerful. Okay, that's one evidence from outside the New Testament. Here's another piece of evidence from outside the New Testament. Other ancient historians followed the exact same format when they wrote their history. They all believed that history was important and needed to be written within living memory, that direct experience was the key, and the ideal witness was somebody who was a participant. So if you look at Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, they're following exactly the same format other ancient historians believed was the best if you're going to write history. Here's another evidence from outside the New Testament. No other claim for authorship took place until centuries later. We don't find anybody in the late first century and second century claiming other authors for Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. This was centuries later that somebody became a critic. Outsiders testify to the information in the New Testament. Josephus and Tacitus and Pliny. They all agree with the story that we get in the New Testament. Somebody's done some research. I think this is interesting. Somebody's done some research as far as what the most popular names were in first century Palestine. They found other written documents. And guess what? The names that were popular in first century Palestine are exactly in the same order of popularity in the Gospels. And you say, well, so what? You know, a lot of people get named Mary or James or whatever it is. But just like today, names back then would go in and out of popularity. You know, for example, in the United States, after World War II, not too many kids born, boys, were named Adolf. Yeah, that went out of style pretty fast, didn't it? So certain names come in and out of style, and they found that the names that were popular in the four Gospels are exactly what you would expect to find elsewhere in first century Palestine. Who would know that in the second, third, or fourth century? Nobody. So, are there reasons to believe that the Gospels were eyewitness accounts? Yes, yes, yes. Let me suggest some resources for you, because I think it's I've just kind of skated over it here, and I want you to make sure you get the right information. You can contact me if I could help you out, Gary, at apologeticsforlife.org. Be glad to send you more information. That J. Warner Wallace I mentioned wrote a book called Cold Case Christianity. Cold Case, C-O-L-D-C-A-S-E, Cold Case Christianity. It covers this in far better depth and just a wonderful way of presenting the reliability of the Gospels. A man named Powell wrote the Holman Guide to Christian Apologetics, H-O-L-M-A-N, Holman Guide to Christian Apologetics, and it covers some of the same material that we've been talking about. Tim McGrew has a talk and a PDF information called Who Wrote the Gospels. Just type that in as a title and just write Tim McGrew. Don't type in McGraw, that's a baseball player, McGrew. And then here's a book I mentioned before, I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist. That's Geisler and Turek. They spent a lot of time on the reliability and the eyewitness reports from the Gospels. G-E-I-S-L-E-R, Geisler. I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist. There's a man named Matt Slick, S-L-I-C-K, who wrote something that's on the internet as well. When were the Gospels written and by whom? When were the Gospels written and by whom? One more good source is called Can We Trust the Gospels by Mark Roberts. Can We Trust the Gospels? It's short, very easy to get through. And then if you look under Jim Wallace's website, coldcasechristianity.com, that's all one word, don't put a hyphen. coldcasechristianity.com. He's got an article called The Apostles Wrote the Gospels as Eyewitness Accounts. By the way, that coldcasechristianity.com has literally hundreds and hundreds of good articles on different aspects of Christianity. I know you'd enjoy it. So when you pick up your Bible, feel good knowing that it was a person who witnessed Jesus, who was there, who talked, who heard, and then reported what he had discovered. So when we read these accounts, we are hearing it from the eyewitnesses themselves.